All right, what's up, everybody? How we doing? We're good? You good?
Yes, sir. I'm actually where you used to be, Austin.
Are you in Austin right now?
Yeah, yeah. My sister lives right downtown Austin. So interestingly enough, my sister is just like, she became a CPA like a year ago. So my family really has no creativity. We all just became CPAs. The thing though is that Texas actually cares about their CPAs. They're doing like, I guess doctors do this, but it's like the ceremony where you get your CPA certification from another CPA that you choose. I think doctors do that. In New York, they just mailed it to us. And then in Illinois, they don't even mail you to anymore. They literally just email you a PDF and you have to print it out and do whatever you want with it. But Texas, they do like a whole ceremony. So that's kind of what I'm down here for
that. And you flew in for that? You flew in for that?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I also hadn't seen my sister for like 2 years. I mean, I haven't been to Austin for like 2 years. I see her probably like, I saw her like a year ago. So it's kind of all in one kind of thing.
That's dope. So I guess real quick on current event, the Titanic submarine thing, I guess that.
Yeah, it's gone.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
The second I heard about it, I had called it. Like,
it's like no way you could find them. I don't understand the whole thing. That was crazy.
The thing that I thought was crazy, I could see myself as the billionaire guy that would say, if the CEO of the business is going down with me, like if he's going to go down and operate it with me, like if he trusts this thing, then I'll trust this thing too. And like, I trust in his trust. I actually do a lot of business deals that way of like, yo, if like you're putting a bunch of money in and you're going to run this thing, then like, sure. Like I trust that you know what you're doing. And so
you have
actually
as much to lose as I do, kind of.
And yeah, I actually think that's like, it was a good lesson on reframing that slightly from, just because somebody can lose a shit ton doesn't mean that they're going to make good judgment calls.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was just insane. Like the fact that they even kind of got it approved. I saw like a bunch of small things where it was like, okay, they fired somebody a couple of years ago. So they've been working on this for years, apparently. They fired somebody a couple of years ago because they were trying to go too fast, or he was saying like it wasn't going to work, you know.
Well, do you know what the whole purpose of building this whole thing was? Like, was this a product he was going to try to sell? What was he trying to build this thing for?
That's a good question. I think it had to do with just, so like these guys were all pretty, a couple of them were Guinness World Record people. Like they called themselves like explorers. They went to the North Pole, South Pole, Antarctica. Like they were just trying to always do this crazy stuff. So I think it was literally like an adrenaline rush. I don't think it was like a product. I don't know if that Ocean Gate, is that a public company? Because their stock probably just crashed. But
no, I don't think so. I think it's just like privately funded. Anyway, it's neither here nor there, but I just thought it was crazy, and it's kind of happening right now as we're recording this. They're kind of calling off the search. But on to lighter topics than getting crushed a couple thousand feet below the sea. I was on Twitter the other day, and there's this guy, Alex Becker, that he had a tweet that kind of went off on he kind of shitposts a lot about like, don't be a beta bitch and like no excuses, no one's coming to save you, whatever. He's kind of that ilk. I was interested in who he was, what he had done, and so I did a little bit of a deep dive on him. He started out in the Navy and he quit in 2011, and he kind of became this digital marketer doing what digital marketers do, I guess, SEO stuff, kind of helping people get more traffic to their sites. That was kind of like his OG focus. And then in 2019, he starts this business called Hyros, which was like a marketing tech, like Facebook ad attribution software. So you could kind of track what's happening all the way through to the point of purchase. Like a lot of times if you go on Facebook and you run a Facebook ad, they'll like give you a range of like what your metrics are, what your return on investment is, but they're kind of guessing a lot of times.
Yeah.
Like,
well, yeah, especially
you can't track all the way through.
Well, yeah, especially because when was it built again? It was in
2019.
Because when was iOS, I don't even remember where iOS 14 was. I think it was right around then. Because that's when all the tracking really went down. And I
So that happened in 21.
Oh, gotcha.
So he started Hyros a couple years before that. I think it was doing well. And then I do think it took off in iOS 14 as basically this way to track your marketing expense. And then at the end of 2022, he got approached by these guys called Bonsai. And so basically what they did was Hyros sold to Bonsai in an all stock deal valued at like $110 million. So like Hyros merges with Bonsai, and then Bonsai merges with this public company that was a SPAC. Yeah, they did like a merger into a SPAC. 7GC, that's what the company's called. 7GC. So Bonsai merges into 7GC and they make Hyros a part of the deal. And so like in one fell swoop and in two transactions, he kind of did the play where he merges into this public company and crushes it. And so now he's like basically out of the business. And so I thought it was just an interesting move from... Yeah, interesting move from a marketing tech attribution platform into a public company deal that crushed it.
And it's insane for an exit for like a, you know, like a decade ago, like a basic SEO person, you know, one of probably 10,000 that are on YouTube right now making those kind of content on basic SEO and running an SEO agency. So the fact that he's kind of made all those successful moves to get to this, you know, $100 million+ exit is pretty insane. He's also a very, you know, controversial, opinionated guy on YouTube too. You know, like he's always calling people out. He's very aggressive and abrasive, but almost like the funny bro that all like the crypto people or the gamers or all those people.
He's huge. He's huge in the crypto space.
Yeah. It's definitely an interesting kind of dude. Was he on your radar for a while, or kind of you just recently came across him? Or
I had heard of Hyros before, and I had kind of heard back when Hyros sold that it was like $100 million exit, whatever. I had never really done a deep dive into what the transaction looked like and why Bonsai was like, who was buying him and how it happened. So sure. I thought it was interesting. I thought it was interesting on this stock deal. And stock deals are always interesting in general, especially when you're doing a stock deal with a company that's not public yet. It's a big play that like roll-up guys will try to do, is they'll try to offer their stock in exchange for acquiring the company because they don't have the capital yet to do it. So a lot of times stock deals are basically just like a signal that the acquirer like doesn't really have the money. I actually got approached to do a stock deal in the trampoline park business. There was a group that had raised over $300 million. No, they'd raised $100 million to go out and do acquisitions. Yeah. They were backed by a private equity company that had taken a lot of companies public. And so they offered to buy us out in an all stock deal. And their whole plan was to take their company public within the next 12 months. They tried to sell us on this kind of like, we're going to go public idea, and you know you're going to be worth more than you'll ever make.
Be part of the pie,
selling to SBA buyers or whoever else. And we turned the deal down. A year later, COVID hit, and I saw the deck that this company had to raise like an emergency $90 million of mezz debt financing, and the private equity company gave them the money. Basically, all of the equity that existed in the company got pushed down to zero because there was too much debt on the business. And so had we done that stock deal, we would have been on paper worth probably double, probably a $50 or $60 million deal. And then after COVID would have been like worth, we would have sold it all for like legit $0.
Wow.
That's crazy.
But why not do the, when you first got presented, obviously in hindsight, it's great, but why didn't you guys jump on the opportunity back then? Like most people would take that deal, I feel, especially at the 50 million, 60 plus.
Because I just don't believe in humans in general. Like I think that they're liars. And so, like, you had that
skepticism even prior to your exit. Okay.
Oh, dude, after like the second I enrolled in law school, like I'm like, my whole trust in the human race is done. I just don't believe them. The deal that Hyros did makes sense, but because it was almost, it was like a bang, bang, bang play. It was, we're going to merge with Banzai. Banzai gets merged into 7GC Holdings. And 7GC Holdings was already a publicly traded company. They're on like the small cap stocks of NASDAQ. I mean, the first deal that I ever did as an M&A lawyer was an S3, like this like short form registration to get listed on NASDAQ. Like it's hard to take a company. It's really, really hard to go through the public IPO process and get market makers and everybody signed on, like to hand over the keys to our business and just trust that these guys were going to figure it out was like, even though they, you know, there were people that had done it before. We just felt like there wasn't any reason to do the deal at that point. It was like, well, y'all could go public once you're publicly listed and you have a track record and you have a stock price. We know what your stock is worth. Then like, we can do it then, but like, you know, Dave and Buster's was public. Like even at that time, even pre-COVID, like the entertainment stocks weren't like doing stellar from a price to earnings ratio. And so luckily my lack of trust in humans pays off again. I mean, it saves the day. It's like, 1,000-0, you know what I mean?
So how about the back though? Like why isn't kind of the common mantra right now or the common knowledge of SPACs that it's kind of, they were like scammy and schemy and ended up being, you know, now worth really nothing. Is that still a thing or is it just like, that was just a small trend a year ago or something?
I think this is slightly different than a stack than like a true SPAC because 7GC had other assets in their business. It's not like they were just like a shell company that had nothing in search of their first acquisition. Banzai is part of their portfolio. And I looked at their stock price like post Hyros acquisition, like they're up year over year from when this thing got announced. I think ultimately it's a good long-term play. It's a good long-term deal. And, you know, I don't know what the documents say. Usually you're locked out of being able to sell that equity for 6 months to a year from the time that you sell to a public company like this. There are plenty of people that go around and try to sell stock deals on the hope and the promise that like they'll go public one day. I actually helped a group here in Utah that was like, they were going to get $5 million in cash and then another $12 million for their business that was like wrapped up in stock of the holding company. And the pitch was that the holding company was going to go public in the next 12 to 18 months. I see that in decks all the time. Like, oh, we're going to go public in 12 to 18 months. But if you don't have somebody that's like taken things public before.
Multiple times.
Yeah. Like that's like, it's such a treacherous and expensive path. It's such a like top 1% of the 1% outcome that like, I just don't.
It's like entrepreneurs that say like, hey, yeah, like all we got to do is capture 3% of the market share and we're good.
Yeah. 3% of the TAM. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like when you're new to business, it just seems like something basic, but it's actually never that easy or never that simple.
It's really, really hard. I'm super jealous of all the guys like Sam Zell and Buffett that like really took advantage of the simplicity of the public markets back in the day, you know, even up into the 80s with like corporate raiders and stuff. But I mean, it's just a different game now. It's so much harder to do. I mean, it's a 10 year path, not a quick thing. And it's big money and you're playing against people that are super sophisticated. So, but I think if I was in Becker's shoes, I think it's a smart deal. I think he made money on it. I think it was a good deal.
So when you're selling when you're doing like a stock deal like that, is there something you're supposed to look at for like the people who are running that deal? Or like, is there something you're like, hey, do you say that you hope for a proven track record and are they already public? Or like, why would someone sell their entire business on a stock deal? I guess Sam Parr, his stock, right?
I think sometimes like it's cool if you have a stock kicker, if that like makes up 10 or 15% of the compensation of the deal. I mean, selling to HubSpot or to Facebook or to Google or, you know, any of those guys where there's like a price that's already set and you know you can value that stock today, that's completely different than a private deal where you have no control of when it sells or when it doesn't sell. Like we would have had we done that deal and COVID hit, we would have maybe owned 10 or 15% of that business because they were much bigger than we were. And we would have no control over their ability to raise additional capital and dilute us further by issuing more stock to more acquisitions. And I think you do it if you're desperate and you just want out and like you don't care what happens. I think you do it if it's a very small percentage. And that's what I told the guys that I was helping here is like, if you would sell for $5 million today, the cash component of what you're getting, I think it's totally badass and you should do it. But if you're going to be pissed, if like that $12 million of additional comp ultimately ends up being worth zero, which is likely the case, it will likely be worth zero. Then like, if you wouldn't sell for $5 million, then I wouldn't sell for $5 million cash with an additional $12 million of stock.
Interesting.
Because you think that they're going to go public. Cause it's just like, you just have to assume it won't happen under any circumstance, unless you're doing venture capital deals. You know what I mean? VC deals. With, you know, that's a different thing, but that's Hyros. That's Alex Becker. That's total crazy. Badass.
Nice. That's insane. No, that's actually a pretty solid exit.
So do you guys remember when, like, I don't know, this is kind of like when Facebook ads were first, like initially starting to get out, there was like two main kind of guys who were like, felt like their ads were everywhere. One was like the Ty Lopez Lamborghini car.
Yep.
Right. And then the other was this guy named Sam Ovens. And so Sam Ovens and Ty were like kind of OGs in this, like, really just mastering like the paid ad kind of space.
Sam Ovens had the like, it was like him like with his arms folded in like a New York City apartment.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So he had like just weird,
like a suit.
Yep. He had that one. He had like some weird, there's another one that.
Like his hair slicked back and like a gold Rolex or something.
Yep. Yeah. He had that. And then there's another one where like, it was just his, like a motorcycle in his.
Oh yeah. His motorcycle in his apartment.
Yeah.
You're like, whoa, that guy must be rich. He has a car in an apartment.
Yeah. And so this guy, you know, he's from, I want to say New Zealand. Right. So he's got like the cool accent, you know, seems pretty cool. So he's ended up actually selling consulting.com. And now he's doing this new thing called School, which is kind of like a lot of, you know, new marketer, like a lot of the marketers are starting to go towards it that way. So, but
which is what? What school?
I'll get into that.
Oh, well, you said that way. I just want to know what way.
Okay. Well, we'll just kind of keep. Keep your attention.
I don't know you're giving me a cliffhanger.
It's always open loop here. So he starts this consulting.com. Basically how it worked out was like, I kind of love your thoughts on like how you would structure this to, I don't know how much he sold for, or I don't know if it actually was a lot, but the way it was initially started was you had three programs, a three-tiered program. And so you come in at $2,000 to $3,000 off of a sales call. And then from that, you basically, if you can get up to, I think it was like $100,000 a month, or I think it was like maybe $10,000 to $50,000 a month. If you're making that, then you're auto approved into the next tier, which was like a $6,000 program, which that one was to help you get to over, I think, 250 or maybe over to 500. And then after that, once you get over to, I think, a mill a year, then he sells you into his mastermind, which was like called Quantum, which is like $36,000 a year. And so he ended up running this thing for, I want to say like a couple of years. I think it was like,
and it was all like coaching products, right? Like consulting, coaching.
Yeah. It was like, yeah. So he was like one of the OGs and actually started coaching other people. He was like kind of one of the OGs of like starting the whole SMMA, like social media marketing agency. Like you can be a consultant without ever having to go to college kind of a thing. And like helping people, like helping dropouts, like start a side hustle, get paid for just doing marketing. And so he starts this whole thing, blows up. I think he was doing over, it was over 20 mil a year is when he was running this thing. And then all of a sudden he kind of falls off the face of the earth. Like just no one really hears from him. Consulting.com is kind of still running, but like as far as content and everything, like no one heard from this guy. And this was like during COVID. And so he comes out late COVID year, or I think last year, maybe in May 2021. Maybe it's 2022. He comes out and basically says, hey, I'm back, and comes out this cool little video where he's like, basically he's been living in like this super small house in on the coast of California, like Northern California, I feel like. And it basically tells him like, hey, I've been doing this whole new thing where he basically cut consulting.com, and he actually uses a framework called Star Principle, or what we like to call
Rocket Principle.
And it shows that like consulting.com at the time was a like his star business. And you let me know if this was completely wrong, because you know the book more, you know like this framework more than I do. But he basically goes and shows like how consulting.com at the time was a star business where it was in a high growth, and he was spending a lot. His is like, he relates his like ads, like he was spending a ton of money, but it was also creating a whole bunch of cash. And so he said he was doing about 20 mil a year, but it wasn't really bringing in that much in profit. And so he ends up cutting the spend, and completely destroys his first program. So like that $2,000 program, and it only sells his $6,000 and $36,000 program, where it's now making $800,000 a month with just $60,000 in expenses. And the way he says is he basically turned off ads, turned off a lot of like the actual like paid outreach and like growing the brand, and basically just kind of had a kind of coasting where, and he said it turned into a cash cow, which is, and which they devalued the business. And so that's why I think he didn't really sell it probably for too much. But then then ended up, that's what he says. He uses that cash cow to basically start this thing called School, which at the time was like a question mark business, where he's like, I feel like this is it's in a very high growth market, but no one knows who he is.
Yeah. So the star principle, you know, the star principle is Mubarak.
No.
So the interesting thing, it's basically the star principle, but with different, it's the star principle. Okay. me trying to make it my own without giving Richard Koch the credit that he deserves. Hey, real quick, if you're a business owner that's doing at least $1 million a year in revenue on a digital or coaching business, we'd love to talk to you. If you go to dealmaven.io and apply on our page, we will get in touch with you and see if we can take your great business and make it even better. So the star principle is a matrix that Boston Consulting Group made in the 80s. What they really used it for was when businesses create a bunch of excess cash and they're trying to figure out where they should allocate it, BCG came up with the star principle to kind of help them think about the initiatives that they should continue to invest in and the initiatives that they should divest, sell off, whatever. And so on the vertical axis of the star principle, you have a follower at the bottom and then a leader at the top. And then on the horizontal axis, you have low growth markets, which are markets that are growing less than 10% a year. And then as you go out of that to the right side, you have high growth markets, markets that are growing more than 10% a year. And so a follower in a low growth market is a dog. It's like, basically, you got to get out of this business. There's not enough growth here and you're following, so you should get out. A leader of a low growth market is a cash cow. Those tend to be businesses like the trampoline park business was that for a long time. The market wasn't growing massively. And so it was just a cash cow business that worked for a really long time and we got out because we were worried about it not working that much longer. When you're a follower in a high growth market, then it's a question mark. And the question is basically, what is it going to cost you to become the leader? So I would say like that's where 95% of all AI businesses, like that's a massively high growth market, but they're all probably going to be followers. And so you try to niche down enough, like the chances of you displacing ChatGPT is zero, but the chances of you being the go-to AI for personal injury law firms, you know, if you niche down enough, you can hopefully become a leader of a high growth sub niche. And then when you're the leader of a high growth market, that's a star business. And star businesses are worth the most, or the best type of businesses to have. But a lot of times they're not massively cash generative from a net profit standpoint, because you have to continue to invest in protecting the leadership position within that high growth market. The reason why they put it leader follower, and then they really focus on the growth that is existing within the market, is because a high growth market, it doesn't evenly distribute. When a market grows, the leader of the market tends to capture the majority of the growth within the market. So like when COVID happened and everyone started going online, right? And online purchases grew by 30%, like Amazon captured 29% of that because they're the leader in a high growth market. And so like whatever you have to do, and then you determine who the leader is based on, it's just sales. Who's market selling share. The most market share. And so anyway, that's what the star principle is.
Yeah.
Off the top of my head, I haven't looked at it in a while, but like that's what it is basically.
Yes.
If you last recall.
That's from a marketing class like 20 years ago. So I don't know if they still talk about it like that.
My concern with Sam Ovens' business, and he probably knows this, but it just sounds like he cut like his top pipeline, his pipeline generation. Because it sounds like his cheapest product was the pipeline that was feeding his second cheapest or most expensive product, right? Like he had that ladder approach that I feel like Robert Kiyosaki does, or yeah. I feel like some people in ClickFunnels have it, where it's, or like even Trump yeah. had it in his Trump school or whatever the hell, Trump University. It's like the ladder approach, that shit, you know? But then you cut out the bottom free tier or like the entry tier. And I think that's where kind of the highest cost of customer acquisition is, but then that's also where that's feeding the rest of your pipeline. So he probably built enough of a brand.
I think the wisdom in what he did was, if you know that you just wanted to print cash,
yeah.
if you turn off the rocket boosters and you quit paying massive amounts for customer acquisition, it's a good test to see like how strong the brand really is, how strong the brand really actually dominates the niche without having to give it steroids every month and paid customer yeah. acquisition and like losing money on the front end. But at some point, unless you're a public company, right? Public companies are kind of in the infinite game where like they're not looking for a terminal point to get off of the treadmill. Like they're paid to keep the treadmill going no matter what. Yeah. I think a lot of people continue to like chase growth without really having a clear end in mind of like when it ends, what's the logical conclusion of this? They over penetrate the market, right? It's like we captured too much and then they have to shrink down. And it sounds like Sam probably mistimed it a little bit. Like he probably could have sold 2 years prior.
Yeah.
You're a star and then you take off the growth boosters and then you start looking for an exit and you look massively profitable. Like if he was netting 750 grand a month, he probably could have gotten, you know, 10x what he got with an earnout deal over 5 years.
Yeah.
And like, you know, that looks like a different exit than yeah, having but it I be bet he kind probably of a falling achieved, star.
Yeah. I bet he still probably achieved like, you know, not a few money, but enough where it's like, okay, I bet he's sitting with 10 mil plus, you know?
Oh, I think he pulled out. I think he pulled 30 to 40 mil out of that business, like just through operational cash flow. I don't think,
yeah.
I don't think he made a massive exit probably relative to what he made, but.
Seemed like it. Because even like the worth of it, I mean, if you go to consulting.com right now, like they're still trying to figure out what that brand even is and what it's going to be going forward. All it is right now, if you go to consulting.com, is it's like free consulting. And like maybe they try
yeah,
to sell
it looks
some
pretty
kind of
dumb.
Back end, but yeah, it's like it's in a real bad. Like, yeah, so I don't think, I don't know, from looking at it, it's like it doesn't seem like it was actually sold for that much. Sam, if you ever want to come on and walk through the deal, it'd be awesome. But I mean, as well, where he was at in there, it doesn't seem like that's where he was going, because he's going to everything. He's moving 100% of his focus towards school. Like he even shut down. He made this video walking through like basically why he sold consulting.com. And then he actually ended up refunding everybody in this little like mastermind he had, which was like everyone was paying like 36 grand a year for, to focus on this thing called school, which school is now, it's basically a software where if like Kajabi and Facebook groups like had a baby, like that's basically what it's a,
it's like bullshit.
Yes, exactly.
It's like a community. A lot of these courses, I guess, they have these community places where you can get coaching and shit. And,
it's like, what do you do once you have enough money? So you just give up.
I mean, it'll see.
It's his passion.
Yeah, like, but it's also been taking off. Like, if you go to like school right now, where their traffic, they're getting around like 7 to 8 million people a month to visit that site.
What?
And so
that's insane. Okay.
The traffic on the loan, like it's been.
Mubarak retracts.
Mubarak. Yeah. Statement. Yeah. That's a good amount of traffic. That's a hard amount of traffic to even buy.
Yeah.
And if it was fake traffic, that's hard.
And if you look on it, it doesn't seem like they're spending that much. All of their traffic is coming from direct.
Wow.
82% is all the direct traffic. And so people are just typing that in right there.
Yeah. No, I'm checking it out, a similar web. Now, he has actually long visit duration. That's pretty crazy. Low bounce
rate. It could be like leaning. Like I probably would say it's half of that maybe. Because I don't know how many of those people are like school users. Like other people like pushing. I don't imagine that's like people looking to pay for the thing. But it might be people just looking to come in and like join groups or join other places like that. Like. And it'll be interesting to see like going towards like if school can become like that star business and move into the leader, because there's another competitor to this called Circle, and Circle's been like a big one.
Okay, I see. Yeah.
I would put a ton of people on Circle.
Vertical.
And so it's basically exactly in a circle. Like it's 100, yes. I don't know, for what I've seen of it, like it's just courses with a community built inside of it, basically what it is. And so the whole test of it, I think we'll see, is if school can take over Circle and be able to like really take off based off of, I think a lot of it was really hoping on like Sam's brand of what he's done with consulting.com. And now it's going to see how it does like to kind of cold traffic to see if people can come in and start using it. So it'll be interesting.
No, this looks legit. Yeah. Now that I'm actually looking at it. I think the comparison that you made now to Circle though, as a competitor versus like the Kajabi one, I think this makes more sense.
Yeah.
I haven't used Circle too much. I've kind of joined communities of other people's circles though.
Same.
And yeah, it's definitely, interesting concept. Yeah.
Hmm. Circle's getting 4 million visits a month. So maybe they already took over. I don't know.
Yeah. And Circles is going down compared to
those
other guys were going up. Yeah. And their average visit duration is literally a third of what was Sam. So maybe he is crushing it on the background. That's interesting though. So I have somebody kind of similar in what you guys mentioned, like the Alex Becker, Sam Ovens. My dude is actually someone called Nathan Lotka. The funny thing is, I think they're all pretty much the same age, like, you know, born late 1980s, probably like in their mid 30s now. This guy, definitely an interesting kind of come up. Like he did the typical thing where, you know, started a business in college, entrepreneur, serial entrepreneur. He launched his first tech company, which was called Heyo. He was only 21. And it was kind of like, you guys know who runs, you know, Noah Kagan of AppSumo?
Okay. Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's another interesting guy that I would probably want to look into. And I've seen a bunch of his stuff. So he had something called King Sumo, which was like a viral plugin, a giveaway type website or type product. I don't know if he rolled it into AppSumo, but that's basically what this Heyo.com kind of tool was. It was just like virality for Facebook giveaways. And so, you know, Nathan, he was able to kind of grow this a ton, basically got it almost up to, you know, I think 7 figures in revenue. It was actually profitable and he got lucky and he actually sold it for like, I think just around $10 million. So I don't know how much he pocketed or so, but he was still pretty young. I think it was like in his kind of mid 20s by that point. And this was like 2015, 2016 or so. So still a while ago. And then he does two interesting things. And I like kind of the steps that these guys have taken. And it's interesting to see, okay, what happens post exit, what these guys do. So what he did was he started a daily podcast called the Top Entrepreneurs Podcast. I think I said this last week, but it sounds like John Stoddard's kind of podcast. But the funny thing about this one is that it was literally just because of like an SEO play. So like, you know, people type in the top podcast or whatever. So that's why he called it that. The funny thing is I did something similar on a much smaller scale, but with In Penny Stock. That was my first business. And it was when I was in that internet marketing kind of world. And I just did it because like people would type in how to invest in penny stocks. And so I just kind of named it that. But, you know, it worked pretty well. It was definitely like back now, Google's changed their algorithm where I don't think like it used to be called Exact Match Domain. That used to be like an SEO factor that used to get you bumped up. But then, I don't know, they have a bunch of these animal updates, a penguin, panda, all that BS. So I'm sure that got kind of removed. But going back to Nathan Lotka, so I think he became like a true creator media entrepreneur because what he did was, and also in the SaaS game, like he did the daily podcast. He did it pretty well. He's been doing it, I think, for like 6 years now. He changed the name, though. I don't think it's called the Top Podcast anymore. It's basically what it was. It was 15 to 20 minute interviews, and he used to do it every day for like 5 years. And that finally kind of built up a base and all that. But the interesting thing he did was that with that data, which each person he would interview, it would be of a CEO of a small private company, usually in the SaaS space. So the cool thing is that 3 to 4 years into that podcasting journey, what he was doing is that he kind of kept a massive Excel file with each one of the founders, with their data, with the recordings, transcribed all that. And then he created a software platform called getlotka.com, which is basically like for a whole contact database for mini software companies, mini SaaS companies. Mini meaning like under 50 million, under 100 million. All those companies that are still doing stuff, but probably aren't big enough to have a real brand unless you're actually dealing with that company. Pretty awesome that he kind of went from that type of like, okay, he did like the manual grunt work to collect all of that information. I think he was one of the OGs of like, I don't know, I'm sure you get it a bunch, Raleigh, or probably YouTube channel of like, yeah, now we get all these, I get it because of like Mpenny stock and other stuff, but like a couple emails a day, or definitely at least one a day, of like someone trying to interview you or wanting to interview. Totally. So like VAs, yeah, to kind of like, you know, perpetuate interviews and all these kind of the podcasting interview style. So I'm pretty sure he got on that like 10 years ago, you know. He was able to get a ton of guests and he was able to monetize it. And then he took it one step further, which is, I guess, because he had sold his company and he started something called Latka Capital. So it might have been a way for him, which was like a small VC fund, you know, which like I think he angel invests out of. But it might have just like the podcast might have been a way for him to find deal flow. But the cool thing is that he used that network and that kind of brand that he built to start something called Founder Path, which is now kind of his main business. And Founder Path is basically like, there's a couple of these types of business models out there, but it's like non-dilutive capital. It's revenue-based financing, essentially. So based, yeah, off of your cash flow. So like, I don't know if you guys have heard of pipe.com, but like those guys did it right. Like those guys, I think, are worth like, I don't know who they were backed by, but they were like, they're worth $1 billion now, and they were only came out like 2 years ago. So I don't think Nathan, yeah, like
got, I think they got, well, I think the pipe guys got booted though. Like I think they, oh, screws. Yeah, they got cut. They got cut out of the company like 6 months founders? Ago.
Okay, yeah, that, and I believe that because they grew like way too fast, you know, like the pipe.com,
yeah,
people. I think they got all the right integrations. They got in with like Shopify. They got in with all of like the website
acquire.com, yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, acquire.com, yep. And so they just grew incredibly. So I'm not shocked, because I'm pretty sure even the pipe.com founders probably didn't expect that level of growth. I remember reading something prior to like ChatGPT, like pipe.com was in like the top 3 fastest growing company valuation-wise ever. But Founder Path, what Nathan Latka did, is kind of based off of that for just SaaS companies. And I think, like, you know, he had an 8-figure exit from Heyo.com. And I feel like, I don't think he's trying to sell this, because it seems like what he's doing is he's using the cash flow from FounderPath.com and just buying and angel investing into a bunch of different companies. So he might sell it as like a holdco style. I think that might be where he ends up with. But definitely like,
well, it says he raised 145 mil in debt and equity financing, and they deployed 60 mil into 130 SaaS founders since launching in January 2020.
So that's like, that's crazy. So then Founder Path is the SaaS company though. But that's the capital that they're using for debt financing.
That's the, cause it's a SaaS company that is, it's a non-dilutive financing deal, yeah, right?
Yeah. So just based cash flow. Yeah.
I think a lot of these businesses started in the 2020 vintage where SaaS was so overpriced, yeah, that, and so getting into the debt stack was one way to get entry into these SaaS companies. And if it's revenue-based financing, I think it'll be interesting as like what the debt is worth in these. Obviously, it gets preference over anybody who put any of the equity in. I actually have a couple friends that have done this more and more, usually as like they're not lending off of their own balance sheets, but they're connecting more and more business owners with debt options as opposed to equity options. That seems to be like a rising trend. I mean, e-com, SaaS, all this like non-dilutive financing trend, which I think is cool. Sounds like a badass business.
Yeah it's like asset-based lending, but it's kind of like on a SaaS company and revenue. So I have some experience with pipe.com, and obviously like if you have a company that's doesn't have enough cash flow and doesn't have enough cash in the bank, then they won't fund you. So you need to have like 6 to 12 plus months of runway. So it's not ever, can be used for like a bridge loan type situation, but definitely for like healthy companies that need some extra capital, but don't want to go out and waste time raising from VCs and losing equity. They can kind of still get extra capital this way.
And the debt stack, I feel like a lot of these debt investments, it's almost like it looks safer than it really is. You are safer than the equity position by definition. But like if you invested in 2020, if you're on the debt stack of a company that gets mowed over by ChatGPT, like your debt is also worth zero.
Yeah.
There's no liquidation value of the business at all. You know what I mean? Like there's no sale value when your revenue goes to zero. And so you're kind of presuming this ARR buildup over time. If you've ever read Anti-Fragile, it's like the turkey gets more and more certain that the butcher is its best friend up until Thanksgiving Day when it goes down to like the confidence in the butcher goes down to zero. like you, as it builds and the ChatGPT comes up and like you go to zero in a day, you're just massively exposed to black swans like ChatGPT, and the debt makes it feel like you have a cushion that doesn't matter when everything's worth zero. I bet the things that they invested in probably in the 2023, like as everything corrected and everything's kind of right sized and valuations are normal again, I bet they're going to get into things that make sense. And I'm sure they get warrants and like options to buy in equity on certain events. Cause like, you're kind of like a lender of last resort. I mean, you can kind of set your terms cause these founders don't have a lot of capital options if they're moving to the debt stack typically to like get something funded.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess that's kind of where they have to look in further underwriting and stuff, because it's probably, do you think those people from pipe.com, I do remember hearing something about their issues as well, but I don't know if it was just because of like inexperienced founders or.
I think it was, my recollection is it was more of the inexperience of the founder than something like something wrong with the model. I mean, they grew really, really fast. I remember because when I was trying to make DealMaven be a marketplace, like, I tried to talk to Pipe because they were doing acquisition financing stuff. And so I looked at who was running Pipe and they were like, it was like guys in their late 20s or something. You know,
yeah,
like, what
yeah,
the?
Yeah.
Like y'all are running
like 31.
Y'all are running a $2 billion business. That's crazy. And then like a couple months later, they got ousted. And
yeah,
I think they were looking for somebody with a little bit more gray hair at the table.
Makes sense. Yeah. They probably still became worth a shit ton of money. So. Still ended up being hopefully. I mean, I don't really know, but
no, I'm sure they did. Yeah, I think that's right. All right, well, that's the pod. Peace.